Yes, sir. Let's get back after it. 9:19 here on a midweek Wednesday, first day of December. JR, Simmer, and Hammer, and the Sens game day to boot. Been a couple of weeks since the Sens played a home game, but the Vancouver Canucks are in town. Always great when another Canadian team is here. Always lots of transplanted fans in the stands, so it'll be a pretty good atmosphere. And some interest in Ottawa, of course, with Drake Batherson back, the debut of Adam Gaudette. All the questions about the lineup and the losing streak. No,
sounds like you're going.
No shortage of storylines. No, I'm not. I might be going on Saturday, though. First game of the year. I haven't been to a game yet this year.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Going on Saturday.
Yeah, I'll be working Saturday, and those are one of the ones. You're excited to see Colorado.
Yep.
Always worth the price, and excited to watch Carolina tonight. And sincerely, as you said, I mean, this is curiosity. And for Brady Tkachuk as a young captain, named on November 5th, JR, has not been pretty and of no fault of his. But you know how badly he'd like to kind of help turn this around, and we'll see how the energy level is coming out tonight.
All right, more on the game coming up. I did want to touch on a couple of other things we haven't spent any time on this morning. Firstly, Hockey Canada is going to announce the invitees for the World Junior Selection Camp today. And I know the TSN had a special on last night. Bob McKenzie had his kind of locks and for sures. As far as who will be in the lineup, one interesting name of note for Sens fans, Bob McKenzie says Ridly Gregg is a lock to make Team Canada. And, you know,
again, no real surprise on that, Jared?
I'm not watching him, the Brandon games, but I'm looking at the stats. Yeah, yeah. He's got, what, 11 points in his last four games. He's had a great start to the year. He had a terrific training camp here in Ottawa. All indications are he's looking like he has been a really good pick, another good pick by Trent Mann.
Yeah.
So it looks like Ridly Gregg will be part of Team Canada. And the U.S. announced their selection camp invitees yesterday. And Jake Sanderson, no surprise, and Tyler Cleven, both who played last year, are both invited and presumably will be. They might be two of the USA's, what, three best? Well, Jake will be the best defenseman, and Cleven will be certainly play bigger minutes than he played last year. Mm-hmm. But one interesting note, who was not invited from a Sens point of view, no Tyler Boucher yesterday, which, again, he's 18, so he's got another crack at it, but no Tyler Boucher.
No, and again, I was at a training camp back in the day where an 18-year-old Joe Sakic got cut, JR, Adam Graves. I can go up and down the list, and including clowns like myself that actually made it. For Boucher, hey, in the summer camp, he was basically, what, the 13th or 14th forward at that time. Hasn't had a great start to the BU side, but, hey, eliminate the 10th pick over. Overall. Yeah, exactly. And hey, you know, this to me is a total post-COVID true freshman, just a whole year. And I would assume, and I would be shocked if he doesn't go back to BU next year and just stay the course. And then I think that's where we'll get a little better handle on where he's at. And he would still obviously be eligible to play in the World Junior next year.
And the idea that's been forwarded by you and others as well, the Ottawa 67s do own his junior hockey rights. So a possibility should he just decide, he and his family, I guess, and his agent, to change course for him to play junior hockey with the 67s next year. Doesn't sound like but that is an option as well.
Yeah, no, for sure. Now, that usually happens. And think about my buddy Sean Rivers, started out at St. Lawrence, went to Sudbury. It's usually a case where you go somewhere, and it's not necessarily that you're struggling, JR. You just feel like, hey, I don't like school. It's not a fit for me. Or you don't feel like you're being handled properly. And by all indications, at least early on, I don't get the sense of that with Boucher at all. So I'd say as it sits right now, and I do believe when we had Craig Betton on, and I agree, when teams try to force us, and was it Montreal did that with LeBlanc or tried to force him out of Harvard? And, you know, hey, if a kid is really wants to do it, but if not, at the end of the day, he's in a real good program in BU and wants to stay there for his sophomore year, then get at her.
Yeah. I believe, and I'm just looking it up right now, I believe the only first-round pick from this past year's draft that's still in the NHL is the guy who was chosen right after him.
Reinhardt?
Yeah, Cole Sillinger.
Cole Sillinger. Oh,
of Columbus. He's the only guy who is still in the National Hockey League. A few of them lasted, you know, including Mason McTavish, lasted up to 9 games, which is the level when you play the 10th, you start to burn, you know, years in unrestricted free agency, all that other stuff that teams keep their eye on with a more eye on a longer range thing. Again, a lot of the Michigan kids, what, there are 4 kids drafted in the top 10 that are going to Michigan. They all wanted to go back to school.
Yeah.
So that, in part, played a role in why there's so few first-round picks from this past year playing in the NHL. Plus, I think last year, a lot of guys just didn't play hockey, right?
Yeah. And so, it wasn't supposed to be a great draft year anyway, JR, where it might not have even graduated. But yeah, COVID, down year, But the nice part about that is that, hey, if you're a draft of most of those teams, we should be a pretty loaded up World Junior. So we're going to get an opportunity to see them along with, hopefully, you know, realistically now for Ottawa, some of the higher picks in the top 10.
Mm-hmm. Now, speculation also yesterday that one of the names we will not see on the Canadian list today is Ottawa native Brant Clark, who was the 8th overall pick by the Los Angeles Kings. I know in the TSN special yesterday, they kind of had him in the mix of possibilities. But I think Bob's list of the top six on defense for Canada were all left shots. And Brant Clark mm-hmm. is a right shot. Mm-hmm. But again, 18, still got another crack at it next year. But that may be a name that I think most of us had said, well, pretty good chance that at least you'll get a selection camp invitee.
Yeah.
But that may not even happen, according to some reports that are out there.
Yeah, and don't look any further than the general manager of the World Junior team, of course, is James Boyd here. So I don't think there's many people based on Ottawa, based on Ontario and scouting that would know him any better. And this is one of the real tricks, and I think it was a fault of Hockey Canada way back when I played JR. The whole list was basically your first-round pick, you get an invite. And in a lot of cases, you end up making the team. And hey, just because you don't make the World Junior doesn't mean you're not going to be a great pro. And just because you're a first-round pick doesn't mean you're going to be good at the World Junior either.
All right. So again, that list is going to come out at some point today. We'll keep our eye on that. The other piece of hockey news, I forgot to mention this with Dave. How about the contract Jack Hughes got yesterday with the New Jersey Devils? Yeah. He would have been a restricted free agent finishing up his rookie deal at the end of this coming season. But the Devils have jumped in proactively and signed him to an 8-year, $8 million average annual value contract. Jack Hughes just got back in the lineup last night versus San Jose. He's missed a bunch of time with injury this year. I think he's only played 2 or 3 games. And so far in his NHL career, in total, he's now into his third season, of 119 games, has 55 points. So $8 million a year for Jack Hughes. What do you think? Money well spent, maybe a tad aggressive.
No, I mean, again, I'll go back to Jack Hughes a little bit, what I've said with Elias Pettersson, JR. The lack of pure physical maturation long-term makes me a little nervous. Kotkaniemi, kind of the same thing. Dealt with players in the past that really could not end up working up enough core strength. So I'd be a tad nervous just based on that. And the same thing I've said about Elias Pettersson, but he certainly has the talent. But does it not feel like the going rate? Like you kind of see that and just saying, oh, well, 8 times 8, there you go.
Yeah, well, you know, Brady was just above that, right? Brady Tkachuk on his new deal.
Yeah, Svetnikov, you know.
Yep. He was just under 8, correct? Yeah, yeah. But I look at all of these contracts that are signed, and I always, my frame of reference becomes the next guys the Sens have to sign, which is, you know, Josh Norris at the end of this year, Stützle the year after that. Sanderson is not a forward. So that's kind of a little bit of a different thing, but you know, not that I think that Josh Norris is Jack Hughes. I don't, but you're kind of setting all of these contracts that all of these guys are signing, kind of does crystallize, I believe, the value of what other guys are worth that kind of slot in at a level below. Now, what is that level? I think I've said, 6x6 for Josh Norris, I'd be more than comfortable with that
if I'm
the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah.
But maybe they want to go 8. Maybe he wants to go 8. Maybe he only wants to go 3.
Yeah.
Don't know what's going on. He's got the same representation as Brady Tkachuk. And I think with the day that Tkachuk was signed, Pierre Dorion said, believe he said he was going to be calling on Josh Norris's agent shortly thereafter. Yeah. We haven't heard anything since then. There's no pressure points on it, but...
No.
This is always, whenever I hear these contracts, this is what I'm thinking about the next contracts for some of these
I agree. And it was Craig Ostercommon, like, we haven't talked in a while, and Pierre Dorion said he'll get at it. It's went quiet. A lot of business does get done at a World Junior, JR. You have an opportunity to see people. You see people face-to-face. And I also feel like, and again, you'd have to go through, but at a time when you went kind of the Eichels and Matthews, and these guys aren't as good, but you just had a lot of players all of a sudden coming in $9-10 million mm-hmm. for a cap that's flattened out, and for where Ottawa will be at as they start to renew some of these guys and then it starts to go back up, it feels like it's leveled off a tad where, hey, like you said, you'd be very comfortable coming to Norris well under 8. And in the case of Timmy Stützle, as it sits right now, I think you'd have a real opportunity here to keep him in and around Hughes. Would you agree?
I was just going to ask that question. And again, Stützle was 3rd overall. Hughes was 1st overall.
Different drafts.
But does this kind of set at this point with Stützle not necessarily knocking down the score sheet?
No, for sure.
does this kind of set a level at which he may come in at or
thereabouts? Yeah, for sure. And then the other part you're going to enter in with Stützle, JR, if this kind of continues for the year, you may get certainly from the Stützle camp on wanting to hold off and play out the final year, and from the Sen side as well. And then if it's still leveling off, then, you know, you may go down the path of bridge contract based on all parties just feeling like, hey, hasn't kind of gone as planned, but not necessarily on either side willing to lock in long term.
Now, I know you didn't watch, you're out of town, so didn't in Regina, so didn't see the games last week that he played.
Cable was down at the Hampton Inn.
Yes, exactly. The three games he played at center, and again, based on practice yesterday, it looks like he may be moving back to the wing with Paul and Brown. We'll see how it plays itself out tonight. But he is still sitting on the one goal. Is there a point where there's a little bit of concern about the lack of production?
No, I wouldn't say that yet, Jer. I don't feel that, you know, with a player, and you get into some comparisons. Now, in the short term, would I do anything different? No, I would leave him at center. But no, I don't look either short or long term. I'd like him to do some things differently in his game, not try to do it by himself, try to shoot the puck a little bit more, not put so much of an emphasis on always scoring. Now, I know he wants to, but no, I'd stay the course with it.
All right. So there, that catches you up on all the hockey stuff. I did quickly want to touch on a couple of basketball things. Raptors lost again last night. They came back. They didn't play at home at all last year. They've come back. That used to be a tough barn to play in. Raptors are 2-8 at home. They lost to Memphis. They just cannot get healthy bodies on the court. OG Anunoby and Gary Trent were out last night. Memphis is, they don't have Ja Morant, who's one of the best new point guards in the league, and they still beat the Raptors. So tough times for Toronto right now, but the marquee game last night, Suns and Warriors, 18-2, Golden State, 17-3, Phoenix, which had won 16 games in a row. And Phoenix won at 104-98. So Steph Curry had an off night for him. I think he ended up with 12 points, I want to say. But Phoenix has won 17 games in a row. Those are right now far and away the two best teams in the NBA.
Yeah, and watching it start to finish, JR, and Devin Booker end up leaving it. Well, that's not very nice. Devin Booker left in the second quarter with a hamstring injury, and they still brought home the W.
Yes, there you go. Breaking it
that's
down.
That's what overnight radio on a half an hour ride in is able to supply me with incredible content.
And what is garnering the most headlines in the NBA? LeBron James sat out last night's Lakers game under the NBA's health and safety protocols, which we would take to mean that there has been something to do with COVID. Whether it's an exposure or a positive test. Again, he said he's fully vaccinated, but it sounds like LeBron James could be all out of the Laker lineup for the next 10 days or so.
Yeah, never, I guess, from an NBA TV standpoint, but I also look at LeBron at, 36 now, JR? Hey, a little rest here, and all he's playing for nowadays is, I'm assuming, I don't know what personal records, but all he's playing for right now is championships.
All I can say right now, and this mirrors society, and we have the new variant as part of our, appears to be part of our reality, which has all come to light here in the last week, but does it, and obviously having gone through it with the Ottawa Senators, does it not have the feel a little bit like we're hearing a lot more, I'm just talking about sports now, a lot more cases of players and, geez, Bruce Cassidy now, coaches, like it feels like we're on the uptick.
Yeah.
And it's a question now of how deep a swath is this going to cut into North American professional sport? Are we going to see? I mean, we had the Sens, and now the Islanders have to postpone games. Yeah. Are there going to be other teams in hockey, in other sports?
Yeah.
Are we going to, is the reality going to be at some point where we're going to see, no longer see, especially in the States, full buildings of fans? Yeah. Like, this is all things I think we should be keeping an eye on, because it just feels to me, unfortunately, like it's going in that direction.
Yeah, I don't feel like in the United States, JR. Now, I did watch Fox News yesterday, and we are fine as far as the new variant. I knew you're saying. I also do, you know, I think that it also speaks to the protocols and management of it, that this is just realistically for society, that this is kind of par for the course. But hey, you're right. As it moves up and you get into whatever season, for sure. But it also tells me that the due diligence and even what they've learned from here in Ottawa led to, I guess, a better handling with the Islanders, did it not?
I'm not sure what you're referring
well,
to.
Well, in Ottawa, it just was like, hey, we got it one day, we got it next day, we got it next day. I think we'd realize now with the Islanders, it's like, hey, listen, the only way to really do this properly, the minute you have a multiple outbreaks until you control it, is to just shut it right down.
Oh, no, they played a bunch of games.
Oh, did they? Okay,
oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, that might have been when you... No, they played...
Okay.
When they went home and opened up their new barn,
they played
Calgary in the first game. They were down like 5, 6, seven players.
Okay, I remember it was an Anders Lee. I saw a couple of names.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. They were, and that surprises me because we know that Lou runs the NHL.
Oh, yeah.
That he wasn't able to coerce someone who makes the decisions to allow them to postpone more. Now, they postponed, I think, 2 or 3 games at this point. But I think they, like Ottawa, were kind of like, we're gonna get this going as long as we can, and then when it gets too far, then we are going to pull the plug.
Yeah, and I also think as you look at this and trying to understand and really trying to figure out the science share on the new variant, as you start to shut down flights coming from other countries, you know, as you get into cross-province, cross-state, cross-country travel, I think that's something also realistically to look at, you know, the inability to enter into certain states or provinces or countries, depending on where this goes.
All right. Okay, we'll take a break. Thoughts on any of that are welcome. We're going to come back, though, and turn our attention to tonight's game and the latest on Matt Murray. And again, he, along with the coach in Belleville, Troy Mann, have made the decision. Matt is not going to play in the game, their game down in Utica tonight. So more feedback on that is certainly welcome. And we'll continue to get you set for the Sens and the Canucks. Ottawa returns home on a 5-game losing streak. A chance to break it tonight against one of the other league doormats. The Canucks are not playing very good hockey either. So it's the Canucks and Sens tonight. Again, note the start time. If you're going, watching, or listening, 7:30 for tonight. 5:30 will be our pregame show. We're live from the rink beginning at 10 this morning within the box. Steve Lloyd and Chris Stevenson taking you right through until puck drop with Dean and Gord tonight. All straight ahead right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200.
This is TSN 1200.
Okay, welcome back. 9:42 on this Wednesday morning. Sens game day. Sens and Canucks tonight at 7:30. Drake Batherson is back. He'll be on the first line with Tkachuk and Norris. So that group is reunited. The last time we saw Drake Batherson, he was scoring a hat trick in the Sens' last win. That was worth the versus the Pittsburgh Penguins. So Batherson back. Stützle plays on the second line, and at least looks like based on practice, he'll start on wing with Paul and Connor Brown. And we'll see wearing number 17, if he's new to you, Adam Gaudette, who actually started with the Vancouver Canucks, went to Chicago, and now claimed off waivers. He'll wear number 17 and center a line with Formanton and Zach Sanford, Ottawa's third line. We'll see him. Says he likes to play center, likes to shoot the puck.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to be part of the power play tonight against the worst penalty killing the NHL has seen in a long time. Canucks are 63% on the PK through the first quarter of the season.
Yeah, and can't imagine for the D core and the PK, Brad Shaw, who left Columbus, is the D coach there and one of the best in the business. So I'm sure very frustrating for them and the coaching staff. And is your boy Formy been a bit under the radar there as far as having not much of a year, Jer?
Are you asking me or telling me?
No, I'm not.
You're asking me. Yeah, you know,
We don't talk about it, I guess. It's interesting because I've kind of always said the same thing. I like him a lot, but I'm always worried about his inability to play with others and, you know, the hockey sense. And it just, hasn't really rolled along quite where I thought it would be, even as an individual this year.
I'll say somebody tweeted this and I sort of felt the same way. I apologize to whoever said this, but. Yeah. They said or wrote on Twitter, I no longer get excited when Formanton gets a breakaway. In other words, he's just not converting.
Yeah,
and again, thinking back to the Ryan Dezingles of the world that when they came in the league, had a million breakaways, and eventually he found a way to convert at least some of them.
He came, became a 20-goal scorer. Condor was the worst because he just couldn't shoot the puck.
No. But all that to say, Formanton for me, and I'm a big fan, I just haven't found him as physical as I sort of thought that he would be. Like, again, I used to rave about him from the year we saw him as an 18-year-old going in and finishing checks hard on the forecheck and not being shy about that
hard
as an 18-year-old. And I haven't seen as physical a play as I thought I would. It's not that he's turning down hits.
No.
But it's, you know, that's got to be part of his, like, forechecking, penalty killing, obviously the speed. Those are all his calling cards, and I'm not saying the guy, I'm not saying is a bust or trade. I've seen some people say trade him. No. I'm just saying that part of his game, I haven't seen as much as I thought.
I think you need a curling coach out on the bench, eh, when he's on the...
Hard!
Hey?
Anyway.
Sweep it. Here's
we got to be triceps, biceps, arceps, hard!
Hard.
Here in a teachy moment, JR, and it's just you're trying to work both sides. Have dealt with on the highest level Peter Bonder, who as crazy as it is, had no hockey sense, was a 50-goal scorer. Have dealt on the lower end with Chris Bartsch, who in trying to teach him became so frustrating for both the student and the teacher in Glenn Hanlon that it really kind of went sideways. But what happens for a lot of young players like a Formanton, who I don't think the game comes supernatural for you, as you become more detail-oriented and try to do it, what you end up doing is thinking the whole time, right? And that really just takes away from, I think he's just more of a freelancer, right? I mean, I'd be chipping pucks into the neutral zone, which I know they try to do. And as you said, on the forecheck, I'd just be unleashing the guy. Hey, man, get in there as the first guy, make contact. But like I say, I think he's hesitating, and a lot of times even D-zone cover. Coverage now, that's actually just leading to him not actually covering his man.
Yeah. So again, I'm always curious when you say that you think that he lacks hockey sense, and I'm not disputing that, what is it when you watch him play? Like, what should we be watching for that leads you to say that?
Well, when you see a guy that, you know, as I said, based on physical talent, JR does so much, but it's really in, I'll use, because the soccer, I think, is a great example. Either with the puck, he kind of takes it and puts his head down, tries to do his own thing, or without the puck, he doesn't have an ability to really get open. Do you know what I mean? He doesn't feel it the way you'd want in a real smart hockey player, and he just never really particularly gels with anybody, right?
Mm. So that part I can agree with.
That's what the person, like nobody, like Adam Oates was the complete opposite, and he had the best hockey sense on the planet, never wanted to touch Peter Bonder because he was so inconsistent. He had no idea what he was going to do. Like Peter Bonder was better to play with a couple of guys that were just out doing their thing, and he'd pick it up on individual skill. It doesn't allow a line to ever flow together. And the analogy on defense would be switching Zaitsev for Zub with Shabbat. The minute you put two thinkers together, everything becomes so effortless. And for Formanton, that's just not there. And it's really not that teachable. But he also does have enough physical skills that as a penalty killer, as a forechecker, you know, as a guy, he can be very realistic to kind of move around your lineup. But he's really tough to play with.
Yeah. Does and again, short sample size. Has not jumped out at me enough where I go as I kind of project the Senators ahead. And let's say that Stützle eventually does end up at center.
Yeah.
And so there's that kind of top two line left wing spot that's open, which I would have said at the start of the year. I can absolutely see Alex Formanton filling that spot. I don't know that I see that now.
Yeah.
I think his skill set, and this is fine. If you're a third line left wing that can get 15 goals, be a great penalty killer, be a great forechecker, be a nasty piece of business from time to time.
Yeah.
Be a great guy to put out when you're protecting a one-goal lead because you're going to win a lot of puck races, etc. There ain't nothing wrong with that.
Not at all.
But, you know, I look at a guy who down in Belleville in his one full year, right, scored 25 goals as a first-year pro.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
Very impressive. Now, how many on penalty kill, how many empty net? But he still scored them, JR, and the stats were outstanding. Also early on in London, he was a big scorer, no assists. That kind of came around as a junior. But the other part, and another comparison I'll use for people, is Eric Cole. And when Eric turned pro, I mean, it was just like, this guy's terrible. He came out of, what, Clarkson College? Well, he did figure it out. But the thing that he added, and he certainly was a big body, but he decided to turn into a true power forward, right? He decided to get dirty. And then, you know, it led to injuries. Did he break his neck or did he break somebody else's neck?
Yeah, he broke his neck.
Yeah, that was against the fella from Pittsburgh/Washington. Anyways, Brooks Orpik. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're just looking at some comparisons there, JR, but that's kind of when you talked about Daryl Sutter. You know, you identify the player and you say, what do you do well? And you put him into the spot. And for Formanton, you know, that's part of the moving of the furniture, and for a coach. And identifying what he does is, hey, the speed is great. There is a spot for him. Can he turn into a guy that's willing to take the puck to the net or go to the net? But as far as his ability to kind of work with others, like I say, it's a very hard skill to attain when it's not there. And I haven't really seen it there from day one.
Right. Okay, 950. So we went through Jack Miller's tweet from this morning regarding Matt Murray, who will not play for the Belleville Senators in Utica. That was an open question based on what everybody had to say yesterday. So Jack, who's obviously with the team, does the play-by-play down in Belleville, says Mads Søgaard will be in net for Belleville tonight. This is Jack's tweet from this morning. Matt Murray will make his Belleville debut Saturday versus Manitoba. Troy Mann says two practices for Murray, not enough. Murray agrees. To which I replied, quote tweeted Jack and put out there, and I just said, I want a guy who wants the net. To which Jack has now replied and says, at no time did Matt Murray say he didn't want to play. The coaching staff presented a plan for his return based on his relative inactivity over the last 3 weeks, and he has agreed to it.
Yeah, exactly. So, just a play on words, JR. A two-time Stanley Cup champion, an NHL regular, and I'll even throw away the salary. I don't need the American League coach, although I respect him a lot. He, you know, yesterday was we're going to talk to Matt and see how Matt feels.
Yeah.
Now today, they have identified via practice that Matt is not ready. Come on. And it's not a question of Matt saying he didn't want the net. It's a question of Matt saying, I want the net. I want to play tonight. I am going to go in and play. You know, that, and this, we've heard the same language here in Ottawa. You know, opening night. Well, we'll check with Matt tomorrow and see if he's ready to play. And, you know, we decided and Matt decided and Matt agreed. Like, come on. Like I say, this is a pattern here that I'd be incredibly concerned with if I'm everyone involved.
I'm not here to dispute what Jack Miller has said. He's with the team. And he no doubt has talked to the coach. I'll just say that what Troy Mann was saying yesterday in both his general media availability and then what he said to Steve Lloyd and Chris Stevenson does not kind of jive with now, you know,
it doesn't at all. Right? And this whole, and again, these are one of the real problems with an organization, and this has plagued Ottawa and lots of other teams, JR, is that when you start out with one person saying, what was it the one time Jared Cowan said that nobody had talked to him or something, and then somebody said they just had a meeting with him, and, you know,
he wasn't either.
In his pool, he said, sometimes you forget. But this whole charade of, first of all, this was going to be big news, right, JR? Like, Matt Murray getting waived was going to be big news. Well, it's just turned it into a whole nother story because nobody's on the same page. I mean, if you want to, and again, David Poile would sit for hours, JR, and say, listen, we're going to orchestrate a message here. We got to be clear here. And everybody, you'd meet with the coaches before the media. You would get together and orchestrate a message. I got no issue with that. That's part of running any company, running any sports team. But like here, I mean, one person saying this and the next person, then they have talked to him. They haven't talked to him. Now they're having a conference call with him and the goalie coach. And, you know, it just, as I said, these little things like this continue to take on a life of its own at many levels.
Which they don't need to.
Well, it also just continues to show that you're not as organized as you need to be as an organization in professional sports.
Right. Not organized on the ice and not organized off the ice.
Exactly.
That kind of speaks to why you are where you are.
Yeah.
And that's the things they need to fix.
Yeah.
They need to fix the off the ice stuff, getting their ducks in a row. And DJ Smith and company have to get their ducks in a row on the ice as well. Because as much as the team, there is a shortage of talent. I don't think there's any doubt about that. COVID is unfortunate. The injuries, well, all teams get injuries. It's an unorganized team. You watch them play, and whether you know a lot about hockey or a little about hockey, watch them play, and you go, this is not an organized bunch on the ice, especially in their own end, especially in defending in their own end, and especially on getting the puck out of their own end. And I fully see that he's dealing with a group that's not as talented as other teams, but I also see other teams that aren't necessarily loaded with six Bobby Orrs that are finding a way to get it done in a more organized fashion. And I think it's incumbent upon the coach to get it fixed.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, again, first thing, be a little more structured, JR. And structure can be fine and it's teachable. Much like penalty killing, it has to do with attention to detail and effort. And even if you're not a great skater per se, you can do it. But the one thing Ottawa, and this is any team, it always resonates with Pat Quinn, and, you know, his big philosophy was, and this is old school hockey where the Dana Mersons of the world could hook and hold, but the one thing they could do is make a first pass. And that's one of the biggest things, even more so now, because we don't see the off-the-glass hockey. Like, I don't care if you're big. I don't care if you're, you know, able to be rough and tough. Your ability in any league to leave your own zone is part of a five-man unit. Your defensemen have to make a first pass. That's why it's so noticeable. Shabbat can skate it, but you take Zub and you're just like, okay, well, boy, that seemed pretty easy. You know, but if the other guys can't, Mete can get out of trouble at times with his legs. Mm-hmm. Holden can make a simple first pass.
It's Zaitsev and Josh Brown are the two guys that are incapable of making, getting the puck out of
the room. And I don't care what kind of structure you have. If Zaitsev's going to take the puck to the corner every time and just hammer it, and Josh Brown just isn't physically equipped, and then Delzato actually with the puck, JR, is outstanding at making a pass. His issues become he doesn't have foot speed down low to actually recover the puck. So you have to, and that's where Lassie Thompson is, first of all, better than almost everything they have. You said, no doubt, probably their third best defenseman, but it's a simple ability. You know, I can have all the structure in the world. I still got to try to leave my zone, especially in a second period and a long change.
All right. Well, we'll see if it's improved tonight. They're back home now. They've been on the road and, again, dealing with, you know, essentially a week lost while they were in COVID. Coach said he didn't want to use excuses. I'm not using excuses, but they're back east now. There is going to be the opportunity at times here to get some practices in. Not a lot. Added a game next Monday, one of those postponed games. So there are a lot of games to come, but there is going to be a little more stability schedule-wise. Yeah. And I would hope we're going to see some improved play.
And organizationally, I would say, okay, I'm not going to use all excuses, but we've had injuries. It wasn't going well. What I would say is almost a mini camp, and this would be from management all the way down. Okay, guys, now here's our chance to reset. Let's go back into the respectability zone, and let's enter 2022 as a competitive hockey club, back to being a 500 hockey club. That would be the goal that I'd set right now for JR for everybody.
Right. All right, well, we'll find out tonight. Again, 7:30 start time, 5:30 pregame show. We'll be live from the rink coming up in just a few minutes.